I think I'm on. Sounds on. If you've got the class material, if you didn't, somebody's going to have to help you out. And this, hopefully this is not going to be your typical, this is a sermon in place of class. Hopefully this will be more of a class, interact. I know that's a little odd sometimes when you really don't know me, but go for it. Don't worry about it. Well, I'm used to a little bit of whatever. So I want to take the material for a moment. I want to turn to page 18. Just a brief, very brief comment there. This is the beginning of a list of sins I want you to get out of your life. And there's only 121 of them. I've been a long time familiar with what they call the seven deadly sins, and those are listed there, and that list started somewhere around 600 AD. It's gone through different variations. But people have listed all the sins, and I took all the different lists I could find, which wasn't too many, really, and then I compiled them into one list. When I got through the one list, I had 121. Now, if you'll look through that, and we're not, but when you look through it later, you're going to find some of those words. You go, what is that word? And you'll have to go back to the 1300s to figure it out. But that's important that we understand that sin and purifying ourselves involves a lot of different aspects and things. And on that list of 121 items, everything's not going to pertain to you personally. But some of them are. And those are the ones you have to go to. Now, having just pointed out that little part, I want to go back to page one. And we'll do our little introduction thing, and I'll tell my story from when I was a kid. And before we got to go out and play Saturdays, we had to clean the house first. So we got up in 1960-whatever, 6, and we got to have breakfast, and then it was cleaning routine. We knew what Mama expected, and we knew where she inspected. We found out really quick that hiding it under the bed didn't work. And then what happened was, of course, you were made to do it again. And I cannot tell you how many times in my life I heard the saying, if you would do it right the first time, it would be a whole lot easier. And I don't know that I've still actually figured that one out, but you have to get in there and you got to see the dirt. And this is one big aspect of Christianity that I'm afraid gets overlooked. I need to make two divisions. We have this practice where we expose false doctrine, and that is good. That is biblical. That is solid. We'll talk about Paul here in just a moment at the bottom of the page, and we need to do that. But let's just say that's half of it. And so if you look there at page one, where I have from the New American Standard Bible, James says, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your heart, you double-minded. Be miserable, mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy into gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you. Now, he didn't specifically say to clean house, you got to see the dirt. But the principle's there. Unless you're already as holy as God is holy, unless you've already perfected holiness, 2 Corinthians 7:1, then you've got some dirt to clean. Now, what I do back home a lot of times, and I've just gotten the habit of it, I'll ask, you know, raise hands. You're already holy as God is holy. You're already so good. You're already so pure. You're already so perfected. There's nothing in your life anywhere that you can look at and go, okay, I need to work right here. And if you can raise that hand, then this lesson's not for you. The rest of us, I got a list of 121 areas that said these are the places you need to check for some dirt. And as we get into the material in a minute, I have 77 places with, I'm going to call them a little blurb, to explain how to look for the dirt so that we can cleanse out the dirt. Or can I use the 1 Corinthians 5 phrase, purge out the old leaven, which is our goal. So 2 Corinthians 13:5, pretty common verse there on page one. Test yourself to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourself. Do you not recognize this about yourself, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you have failed the test? And so, again, we have this inward looking. And this is a very important part of our Christianity. And learning to break it down and make it very practical, I think, is where it gets to be challenging. So we have this wonderful job, and it is our mission, it is our duty, to point out false teachers and to expose why their teaching is false. That is absolutely biblical. I'm thinking the verse off the top of my head, and I'm drawing it a little bit short, but I want to say that's Ephesians 5 about exposing error. That it's not just real clear right now. I want to say Ephesians 5:12, somewhere in there. But if you'll look there, you'll find it some in there. So that, you know, totally good and biblical thing. But now look at what Paul said. He said, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. But I discipline my body and I make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified. So Paul's out there and he's doing, I'm going to say, the external thing. And he's preaching the gospel that ought to be preached, and he's doing a wonderful job, and he's dealing with some things that you and I can only try to imagine. If you think about 2 Corinthians 11, where he lists all the things that he suffered, he's doing the external thing. But did you catch it here? He didn't use the word internal. But he's doing the internal thing too. I discipline my body. And over in 2 Corinthians, and it's 10, and I believe it's verse 5, he says, we bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. It's challenging, doesn't it? And it is challenging. Jesus said, this is a straight and narrow way. This is tough. Doing the Christian thing is hard. And my opinion is that when we take the part of the straight and narrow road that leads through our own heart, that is the hardest part. It can be challenging, it can be unnerving to have to challenge a false teacher and go toe-to-toe with them in some situation or another. That's not the picnic. But I'm going to tell you that is easier than sitting down and looking in the mirror and going, you know, I'm really not the mate I should be. And the thing I need to change is, and the reason I've been such a jerk is, and getting down to those hard core parts of your own heart is more challenging than standing up to a denominational friend who's espousing some kind of error. Both tough, but my opinion, the other is tougher. Until you learn to do it. And then when you learn to do it, you're like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. So let me give you a little preview on that. Now, number one, this is not about beating yourself down. This is not about, you know, you sitting there and going, having your, oh, I'm such a bad Christian moment. I'm such a failure. I'll never be what the Apostle Paul was. Give that one up. You're not. I won't either. So, you know, don't set an impossible standard that, you know, and then destroy yourself by it. Now, this gets a little tricky. Aim at an impossible standard. Yes. But don't beat yourself up for not attaining that impossible standard. So a baseball player gets up to the bat. Does he ever aim to strike out? Y'all do baseball. Is that ever a strategy? It's usually a hit. Now, it may just be bunt the ball, but it's a hit the ball. So they're aiming to bat 1,000. A really good one's going to bat 400. That's super crazy good, right? Okay, so they're aiming at perfection, but they know, I'm not going to get it. Any bowlers? I used to bowl. I can do bowling. Perfect score, 300. How many times did I hit 300? Zip. I was lucky to see past a 200. But it was fun. It was exciting. It was exhilarating. You loved the challenge. And that's what I want you to do with your spirituality, is not beat yourself down like, oh, I'm never going to get this. I want you to go at it. I'm going to be the best spiritual athlete I can be. You know, have that, I'm preparing for inspection. And when the drill instructor comes in here with his white glove on, he's not going to find a speck of dust anywhere. And while I stand at attention and he walks out, I'm going to think to myself, showed you. Now, don't do that to God, but, you know, it's that positive attitude we want to develop while we're looking for the dirt. And as kids, we learned to do that. As kids, we wanted to do it so that Mama came in, she couldn't find anything wrong, and she'd say, okay, you can go play now. And now and then, she would even be a little surprised that we did it that good. Now, that wasn't real often. You know, oh, well, it's fourth grade. I was just a kid. So what you do when you read these is that you just kind of sit with it. You ponder it. The verses that come to your mind may be entirely different than the verses that come to my mind. This isn't about a specific set of verses. The applications you think of for your life particular, not somebody else's life, your life, may be very different than how it applies to my life when we start getting down to the detail. That's okay. But I'm wanting to be book, chapter, and verse Christian. I'm wanting to build on that basis. That means I've got to look in the mirror of God's Word, because as James, I think it's 1:27, says, we're trying to keep our garment spotless. And I want to be really, really careful. I can use a really easy example of that. My wife wore white today, and she said on the way over here, let's see if I can keep this clean. Okay, ladies, you got the idea, right? Now, us men, we're going, huh? Isn't that what a tie's for? Just cover that spot up. They have that same idea that when you're wearing white, you want to keep it clean. And that's what we want to do spiritually. When we find that spot, we want to get rid of it. And it's a productive thing. It's not a self-condemning thing. And that I'll try to reemphasize that more than once. So one other comment, and we're going to get right into number one, and we're just going to take our time and work through them as far as we get. The way I worded things in the blurb may not be the way you wanted to word them. You might look at it, some of them, and go, what is he thinking? Don't worry about it. Just make up something that makes sense to you. Or send me an email or a text, and I'll tell you what I was thinking, if I can remember. And so, it's the limited focus. How many times have you seen somebody in something and their behavior wasn't right, and they give that doesn't count? Now, that one doesn't really count there. And so that's probably, I got a hedge on you. I don't know 100% of the time. There's some things that don't count, but they're not absolute sins. They're a matter of opinions, and you got some leeway. And there are other times where we just brush them off and say they don't count when they did count. So let me see if I can give you a quick example. You're having chest pains, and you're saying, we don't have time for the ambulance, get me to the hospital. I throw you in the back of the car, and I put the pedal to the metal. And I'm breaking the speed limit, and I'm easing through the red lights, and I'm getting you to the emergency room. And I'm going to do that, incidentally. I'm not going to slow down and drive my normal slow old man pace. Cop pulls me over, he's going to have to follow me to the emergency room. Then we can have our discussion while they're doing whatever they got to do to you to keep you alive. That's different. I'll gladly say, okay, that one didn't count. But I know people that are snarky enough that go, well, hey, I obey the speed limit. I obey the law. I pay my tickets every time I get one. I'm like, no, I think you're missing it there, you know. So I can break a little bit of the law getting you to the hospital. I can't go, okay, if I could do that, take him to the hospital, I sure want that cup of coffee and my donut really bad. What if I break the law a little bit now? So you see how I hate to say you got to use some common sense, but you have to use some common sense. And when we're saying something doesn't count and we're lying to ourselves and it really does count, now we've got a problem. So we tend to use the word compartmentalize. I can't even say the word. I could type it, but I couldn't say it. We that word, our life. And we separate the spiritual from the daily. And you've run into it. If you've talked to many people, how many of you know folks, don't call any names, who here at the building, they're awesome people. You think, that is one of the sweetest little old ladies I've ever met. Or that is one of the sweetest men I have ever met. I wish that was my grandpa or my husband. And the family sitting off behind going, yeah, right. Well, let me go ahead and give them to you. Because behind closed doors, Oh, but that doesn't count. See, that's private. That's just between me and my wife. Be careful. I realize husband and wife have a confidence in a relationship nobody else on earth has, but there's still some rules there, right? And there is this, you know, raise your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And, you know, you spare the rod, you spoil the child. I get that. But then there's a line you cross that's abusive. And so being honest with myself. Now, the only place I can do this is I've got to sit down with myself. I'm not saying sit down with my wife. I'm saying sit down with me and the Word and have the courage to look at me like God sees me. Can I learn to see myself like God sees me? Now, that's a challenge, but this is part of really knowing me and my spirituality and where I am in relationship with God. Now, if I know where my wife is in her relationship with God, I don't have a problem with that. But I need to know first where I am in that relationship. And if I can't be honest with me there, what have I got? I don't have much of anything. Let's do Revelation 3:1 real quick. These people that have these awesome reputations. And I'm not opposed to a good reputation. What's the saying? Reputation is what people think you are. Character is what you are. And so this is one of those that make us go, let me check this out. Revelation 3:1. The angel of the church of Sardis write, he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars says this, I know your deeds, that you have a name, that you're alive, but you are what? Dead. They thought they were alive. I'm sure that, now it doesn't say they had a good self-opinion. I'm going to assume that part. They had a good reputation. And Jesus said, no, you don't. You know how dead you are on the inside. Now, how much do we have to mess up on the inside to blow it all? You know, James 2:10 ought to come to mind. Again, I want to be careful because I don't want you beating yourself up. But I don't want you condemning yourself. I want that athletic mindset that says, you know, I'm not major league yet, but I'm getting there. You know, you think I'm stumbling now, wait till next year. You're going to go, wow, he's really grown. And, you know, with Christianity, you get to keep growing and growing year after year until your mind starts fading away, which is kind of exciting. We get to stay in here and keep at this. We get to keep honing it and getting better and better at it. So I gave you the behind closed doors example. Where have you seen other people compartmentalize? I said it that time. Compartmentalize their life and go, no, that didn't count. Work, that's the next one I had down, and she didn't see it. I had a guy at church stand and tell me to my face, and I was so overwhelmed, I didn't know what to say. He said, work is work and church is church. I'm like, whoa. What do you do when somebody hits you with something that blatantly wrong and they're like so confident, I just nailed it. I'm like, I wish I could tell you, I think fast on my feet. I am real good on my feet 2 days later. But fast, I am not. So we got the work thing. Work is work. Church is church. And now what happens at work? You know anybody that steals from their boss? Does it have to be money? Does it have to be supplies? You know, I'm old school. Now, I know some of you outdate me a little bit, but I'm 65. And back when I was a working kid, you didn't even have to have a Social Security number, which is kind of cool. And, you know, they hired you 4 hours, you gave them 4 hours. Now, the boss said, do it, you did it. And if for some reasons of conscience you couldn't do it, you could say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Now, you may get your pink slip, but you gave him 4 hours and you did it. And you didn't sit around in the break room. Or nowadays, how many of you have been to McDonald's or wherever and you're trying to place your order and the young kid is standing there on the phone or just a minute, I'll get to you. What would have happened had we done that back in 1974, 84? You're out of there. You know, we'd have got one warning. You can put that phone up or you can get out of here. Okay, now where I'm trying to go is, am I really being honest with my employer? Am I really giving him the, you know, he hired me for X. Am I really giving him X? I don't mean every single second of every single hour you're there, you have to be doing something profoundly, astonishingly productive. But am I doing what my boss wants me to do? And if I can say yes to that, then this isn't applying to you. But if I can say, you know, I do check my text off a lot, you know, but sometimes I got to, you know, mama's sick. Okay, that one doesn't count. But nobody's sick. I do scroll through TikTok or Facebook, you know, yeah. You know, there's those places you got to look. And depending on the agreement you have with your employer, so there's some flexibility there, you just got to be honest with you. So we have family and we have the workplace. Can you think of another? We've already kind of hit this one with the ambulance example. You got to obey the law, right? Well, except when you're filing your taxes, right? Because you know there ain't nothing but a bunch of crooks up there anyway, right? All they're going to do is take my money and give it to a bunch of gays. What did Christ say? Render unto Caesar's. Oh, I don't get that prejudgment thing, do I? You know, speed limits. Now, I get it. I get it now. And again, everything's not black and white, you know, cut and dry like it seems like it used to be. It used to be if the speed limit sign said 35, it meant 35, and they would have no tolerance. You know, and so technically they pull you over 36. Now we know most of them never did that. My granddaughter, 16, just got her driver's license, which was one of the scary things for a grandparent, but it's kind of cool too. And she said, no, the driver's manual says, go with the flow of the traffic. Oh, so you're going through St. Louis and everybody's going 65. I don't care if the sign says 55. You better get with the flow of traffic because they don't want you impeding traffic. But I'm going from Pine Bluff to Little Rock, which is usually a pretty not populated drive, and the sign says 75. It's going to be a little hard to explain to the trooper who pulled me over going 85. Well, I'm just going with the flow with the traffic. And he's going to say, sir, what traffic? I don't know. So... The self-honesty thing comes in, and so I'm not trying to say everything is 100% this or 100% that. You got to look at where you're at, and you got to be really brutally honest with you. And here's the beautiful part about it. It's between you and God. Now, if you have a close friend or companion that you can discuss it with, I think that's fine. James 5:16 says, confess your trespasses one to another, so that's great. You women have a great advantage in that you're more inclined to do that talking than us men are, but you don't have to. Whatever issue is putting guilt on your heart, you can take it to God in prayer. And I'm not trying to get God to see it, incidentally, because He already knows it, right? I'm trying to get me to look at it. I'm trying to get me to look at why am I such a jerk to my wife when we're at home by ourselves? Now, incidentally, I don't think I am. She's smiling, so I think I'm okay. But I need to look at that. And I need to look at it. Okay, where's that coming from? Why do I have all this anger in me? Well, what's going on in me that makes me keep acting this way over and over again? And until I have the courage to get in there and deal with it in the light of Scripture and get really down to what's bothering me, it's just going to stay there. I call it the jack-in-the-box effect. And, of course, young kids nowadays go, what? Okay, years and years and years ago, right, we had the little box, the little crank on the side. And I could almost give you the music, but I can't quite do it. So you turn the crank, you turn the crank, you turn the crank, and after it hit a certain point, the little jack-in-the-box jumped up, right? And you're in the first grade, it scares you to death. And you push it back down and you do it again. And you know it's going to do it again, but you're like, oh! And you get a little hit of dopamine, is how we'd say it now. You push it back down, you do it again. So what happens is we've got issues. We haven't looked inside to clean out the dirt. What is going on with me here? And so I stomp it back down. And the music starts playing Only this isn't as predictable as Jack in the Box. And it may be a week later, it may be 6 months later. All of a sudden, he's still there. He's loaded. He's just waiting for a time to come up. And something happens. It can be a look. It can be a word. It can be a tone of voice. And all of a sudden, boom. Lou, when I start pointing my finger at her and saying it's her fault, I've got a problem. You know? So I'm not saying that they're not mates that are button pushers and that could happen, but the first place I need to look is me. And I'm of the theory, and I know this won't work 100% of the time, but I'm of the theory that, of course, over in Ephesians 5, it starts at 22. Men don't read verse 22 because we get all messed up by that one. You know, wives submit to your husbands to the Lord, and we're like, yeah, good verse. No, that's not our verse. We go to the next one down. I forget exactly which it is, but it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, and he gave himself for it. Okay, that's my role. Now, I'm sure there are outliers and exceptions, but most women, if they have a man that will pour himself into her sacrificially a good portion of the time. We won't make it 100% because none of us are going to bat 1,000. But, you know, you're really pouring yourself into that woman and filling her up. Now, what's she going to do back to you? She's going to love you, right? Because that's the way we're made to work. Now, are there some psycho freaks out there that it's not going to work on either side? Absolutely. If you're married to one of those, I'm sorry, I don't do medicines. You got to find some other help there. But, you know, if we're in the realm of biblical workings, you know, we got that one. So we got to, you know, just be careful. If you compartmentalize something, it's not always wrong, but it may be, yeah, I've got some dirt over here I don't want to look at, and I need to. I just need to man up, woman up, and I need to go look at my dirt. And again, let me say it. I know this is repetitious, but I don't have to do it in front of the congregation. Now, public sin would be different, but I'm talking about these private things. And I don't really have to go to my wife initially and lay it all out there. Oh, I've been such a jerk all these years, blah, 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 you know. First step I need to take is get honest with me. Well, the scripture's in front of me. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, gave himself for it. Nurture and cherish your wife as you do your own body. Okay, let me start there. I'm not telling her anything. I'm just starting there between me and God. God knows where I've been messing up. I'm just trying to get me to see it. Because to clean house, you got to see the dirt. Now flip over to page three, unless you got something you want to add to that. To me, this is where, when you have the courage to get into this area, this is where you're going to get your most sense of purpose and fulfillment. Is it fun to beat one of your denominational friends in a little informal debate in the break room? Absolutely, it is fun. You know, and your coworker looks at you and kind of high-fives, boo, you told him, didn't you? I didn't know that verse was in the Bible. Yeah, it feels good. For about 10 minutes. But when you get in here and you clean up some dirt and you got a new clean spot, that one keeps feeling good. And that's where you're going to get some of the depth of that sense of purpose and momentum. So now we're at redefining things. You know, people go, oh, I know that looks like dirt, but that's that's not really dirt. That's just, let's go to Psalms 101 and verse 3. I'm getting there. Look, I'm turning pages slow because I don't know. I got a new Bible and I'm getting old. You got time to get there. If you're on a device, you're going to beat me. I will set no worthless thing before my eyes. I hate the works of those who fall away. It shall not fasten its grip on me. Now, I want to focus on that. I will set no worthless thing before my eye. Okay. What's a worthless thing?
About 9:10.
Amen. You nailed that one down. No, I don't think Jason wants to take your phone away. No, I like my phone. I want to keep my phone. But I got to be honest with me. What am I looking at on my phone? Now, what can you get on your phone nowadays unless you're a kid and you have parental constraints? Which a lot of parents don't. Parents, if you don't have parental constraints on your kid's phone, do it. I'm going to do a real quick aside. My daughter is like, she allows me to say her age, but it's just a joke between me and her. And my grandson, oldest, is 24, so he's kind of like, thinks he's grown. Incidentally, he's not. You're not grown until you're at least 25, and that's pushing the early side of it. And then there's the 16-year-old and the 12-year-old. My daughter has constraints on their phones. They can't go certain places. Their phone shuts off at a certain time. They can be at our house spending the night, and you can see when their phone shuts off because they joined the conversation. They're back in the real world. Put those constraints on there. And then when they get older, get their own phone. Do them like I did my kids. You can have a motorcycle when you move out. I don't think motorcycles are a sin. They're fine. I don't want to mess with my kid on a motorcycle. You paying your own medical bills, you do what you want. You know, you get your own phone, you do what you want with it. But right now, my house, I'm paying that bill. This is how it works. Okay, end of rant. So I'm going to set nothing wicked before my eye. So Jason's right, 9:10, absolutely. TV, what's on TV nowadays? Me neither. I'm kind of like, I don't know when you gave up TV, but I gave up TV like, I remember about the time. It was when Will and Grace, that sitcom just started, and it was aggrandizing gays. And I said, I'm done. Now, there's a little more to the story than that, but I just said, I'm done. Boston Legal, and I love Captain Kirk, whatever role he plays in, but, you know, it was too far over the line, too. And I said, I'm through. And I haven't watched TV in, man, 15 years or longer. It gets away. You don't either, do you? Why? What's on there that I need? Now, if you're a sports fan, I get it. I don't want to take your sports away from you. But so much of that garbage, you know, is that's all it is doing is indoctrinating us and our children. And it's not just the sitcoms. It's the cartoons. And I don't want to take all your cartoons away from you. Tom and Jerry was wonderfully violent, wasn't it? The Roadrunner, wonderfully violent. And then there's this thing they call anime. You better watch the version on that one, because it's got moral values in there that it's glorifying that you may not want your children watching. That's not my place to tell you what let them watch, but I will say nothing. Well, you know, but that's just kids having fun. Watch it. That's redefining it. Will a child sow their wild oats? Yes or no? Yeah, most likely. Most of them do. Does that mean I have to endorse it as the parent? So in my house, when the kids did stupid things, they met the lawnmower, so to speak, when they came in the door. And after they had been thoroughly informed about the inappropriateness of whatever we're discussing and sent to their room, it wasn't unusual, after I cooled off, to look at my wife and go, remember when we did that? You know, so, you know, you're not dumb. You don't forget your past. But my past doesn't endorse their past. Just because I made mistakes doesn't mean they get to without consequence. They're going to make mistakes. That's part of growing up. And they're going to learn to be held responsible for the mistakes. And I'm not going to redefine it because it's my kid. And isn't that crazy nowadays? We see that all the time. So when I was in the eighth grade, I had this big old rubber band. And I was in the back of the class and I lofted it up in the air and I hit the teacher. I'm like, good shot. I thought she'd never know who did it though, right? Because I was in the back of the room. A little bit later, I got a letter that says you can go home for 3 days. And I got to go home and, you know, thought I was going to vacation for 3 days. You know what my mom did? She was not a good mom. She walked down to the school and said, how can I help you straighten up this young man? My next 3 days were a nightmare. You think the thing about the drill instructor making you do the floor with a toothbrush is just on TV? My mama saw that movie. I cleaned every baseboard in that house. I vacuumed everything you can vacuum. I mopped. I did it all. When I got to go back to school, I was like, mamas don't do that nowadays, do they? What happens more often than not? How dare you pick on my baby? No, we don't do that as Christians. We don't compartmentalize and go, okay, this entertainment or whatever. Let's do it again. Let's make it very, very trivial, but this is still serious because we're dealing with people. I'm at the fast food restaurant, which there is not one in Pine Bluff. Now, they're there, but they're not fast. And if you do the drive-through, you better just stop there and go ahead and unpack it and be sure you got the right order. You wait till you get home. It's anybody's surprise. So, you know, we like Taco Bell. I know somebody don't like Taco Bell, but Sharon and I do Taco Bell frequently. It's just handy, and it's time to sit down and visit and just chat. And now and then there'll be somebody who over a $10 order is getting livid. They're upset. They're angry, you know, with what's going on behind the counter. And I'm thinking to myself, that little minimum wage teenager doesn't care about your order. You know, why give them trouble? But it's there. And they get ugly. But this is different. This is my order. I got 12 bucks on this order here. I got the right to. No, you don't. Not if you're Christian. Romans 12:18. As much as depends on you, live at peace with. Well, no, but it doesn't mean that. No, no. It really just means, you know, important people. Amen. And that means the minimum wage worker behind the counter. Oh, and I love this one. You know, I go, I want a number one. You want a what? Number one. Just a second. Let me lean around. It's that character there. It says one. You know, the slow thing. Don't give them three items in a row. You know, I want a burger, I want fries, I want a Coke. Because you're going to have to repeat it three more times. Okay. All right. That's the way it works. That's where we're at in our society. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. That selfishness is there. It's crazy. So, quick story. My son was away at Afghanistan, and he got a real wake-up call on what poverty is. The locals would dig through their trash. If they found a Q-tip with one clean end, they would keep it. Let that soak in a minute. And then if we were back here at McDonald's and somebody was throwing a fit over having a pickle or not having a pickle, he was really having to control his temper to not lay into him and say, let me tell you what a real hard time's like, dude. You don't have a clue. And the fear, you know, and how we navigate that, because, you know, the children's advocacy and stuff, I think is part of the reason we have more homeschooling now and those kind of things. And in some areas, it is really bizarre. And so the governor of Indiana just got ripped on liberal media because he signed a bill that if a kid goes in and tells the counselor, I want to be called them and they, I'm no longer a he or a she, they have to report it to the parent. And the liberals don't like that the parents are empowered. And at some point, we have to own our ecclesia, our 2 Corinthians 6, and come out from among them and take some stand. But exactly where you do it, depending on the system you're in, be wise as a serpent, harmless as a dove. I wish I could give you a black and white answer, a yes and no, cut and dried, this is the way to do it. It's not always that easy, is it? That's just not. And so now I got to get back with my own self-honesty. Time's up. Okay. Gary's kind of giving me this. This is like 2 minutes, one. Okay, run through the material as you want. You run into something that's totally perplexing. Somebody's got my contact info, and I'll try to tell you what I was thinking. I'm teaching this at Pine Bluff, so I'm not through it yet. But enjoy it as much as you can, and we'll take a break.